The other thing that's actually really difficult that people probably wouldn't notice if you weren't really in the system looking at who's mm-hmm. being identified and ranked is that in baseball, there is almost zero reward in 2024 for potential.
Well, welcome everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Data Chronicles. My name is Ed, as you guys already know, also known as the Dadhead. And with me, guys, I got a treat for you guys. I got the man behind Black Baseball Mixtape. Man, I'm excited to have Cheats on the podcast, dude. We've been going back and forth trying to schedule some time together. Mark Cheeto, my friend, how are you doing today, brother?
Man, I'm fantastic, Ed. I'm excited to be on, man. I'm pumped. I'm a big fan of what you do, my man.
I appreciate that, man. And I'm a huge fan because when you get into baseball, right, you always got to get into, like, the Negro Leagues baseball, you know, minority baseball and all that. And I love what you guys are doing over at Black Baseball Mixtape. But that's a little bit ahead of our interview.
All right.
You know, let's not talk about that right now. But I want to talk about, man, is you right now. Tell me, man, like, you know, baseball, right? Like, you know, why is it baseball? Why, you know, it could have been other sports, but how did you fall in love with this sport, man?
I mean, well, I love baseball. I really do. And I've played since I was six. I've probably been going to a little league baseball field since I could walk. I've got a brother who's 5 years older than I am. He was playing before me. So I grew up around a little league baseball field, and there was nothing better than a Saturday 6:30 game between 10, 11, and 12 year olds. And I'd be, you know, not old enough to play in those games. I'd be outside playing cup ball or, you know, pickle or something with my friends who ultimately one day would want to be those guys. Mm-hmm. Want to be the guys that at the little league that played on the 10, 11, and 12 year old, like, primetime games. Right. And so we stuck with it. Me and my group of friends, we all played baseball through high school. Our last game was most of our last games was our senior year in high school. And, you know, we still remember those memories vividly long, long, many moons ago. Mm-hmm. But I just love the game. I love everything about what baseball is. And it was just such a big part of my life. And I wanted to share that with our community who, you know, it's not rocket science. Mm-hmm. The last 20 years, we've seen just a dwindling number of Black baseball fans. We've seen a dwindling number of Black American players in the major leagues. We've seen a dwindling number of Black American players in college baseball. Some of that stuff is starting to move in the right trajectory and change, but the watershed, you know, mark of Black players in baseball was in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I really want to do is share my passion for the game, educate folks on the game, tell anybody that's even questioning it that Black people belong in the game, have a place in the game in 2024, which is important to say, because I think, like you're saying, a lot of people look at Black baseball and they look at it in the past tense. They look at it in Negro Leagues, or they look at it Jackie Robinson or Hank Aaron. And I'm like, nah, we got exciting players doing the thing now. And we just gotta make the world and make America in particularly aware of these players, what they're doing. And that's kind of part of my responsibility, I feel like, at the Black Baseball Mixtape.
That's interesting, because you're right. You know, when I think of baseball, but, like, you know, to me, it's a little bit different, right? Me being from Puerto Rico, right? Like, it's like I grew up, you know, idolizing all these, you know, Latino players, right? You know, I'm still to this day my favorite baseball player. Never saw him play live, but is Clemente.
He's got to, you know, be Roberto Clemente. He's got to be, right? It's got to be.
And that's what I'm saying. He's Puerto Rico's, you know, son, right? So it's like when you think of Puerto Rico baseball, you know, he's not the first, you know, major league baseball player to play for, and you know, for Puerto Rican player to play in the majors, right? But he's the most, like, you know, one that you notice, that you know of, right?
He's the only one of three players in all of baseball that's won the Congressional Medal of Honor.
How insane is that?
One of three.
That's just, oh.
Yeah.
Right? So that automatically, to me, that's like right there.
He's amazing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. What he did on the field and off the field, like, would never be compared, right? So, and like you were saying, it's like, you know, you wanted to bring light to, you know, these players that you guys are seeing nowadays that we are, you know, because these are like absolutely wonderful players. Like, you know, the skills that they have is, you know, is cannot be compared to other players. And that's why I love this, what you're doing at Black Baseball Mixtape.
No, I agree. There's such a rich history between Black American players and Latino players. Like, a lot of folks don't fully understand that when we're talking about the Negro Leagues, it wasn't just Black players in the Negro Leagues. It was the White League and then everybody else. So there are so many just proud Latino players, Afro-Latino players, Puerto Rican players that really cut their teeth in the Negro Leagues and some of the best players. And then Black players would go down for winter ball. They would go down to Puerto Rico. They would go down to Venezuela. They'd go down to, and that's how they made their living. So it was
You got Cuba, Dominican Republic, right? Like, you got all these players that
absolutely
came during the winter.
Absolutely.
Still, you know, play baseball.
And it was some of the best leagues. Those leagues were probably better than what we would call Major League Baseball when everybody would be down there. It's amazing. So, no, I fully feel and understand what you're saying, and the impact is just so great. And I think all of us do our best to let people know that rich history continues.
So let me ask you this. And a little bit about me, right? I started doing my podcast and I started doing, you know, Data Chronicles during the pandemic. That's when I really started. You know, that's when it all started for me as far as, like, you know, creating the brand. For you, what was that moment for, like, you know, when you decided, I want to create, you know, Black Baseball Mixtape, I want to start doing this. What was that moment for you?
Oh, yeah, it was after you, for sure. It was after that. So I've had experience in media. I was a hip-hop writer. Still, every once in a while, we'll dabble in an article or two, but not so much now. But for about 10 years, I wrote hip-hop. I'm from Richmond, Virginia. I'd started a blog that was a Richmond-based community blog that really highlighted...
The Flying Squirrels.
Yeah, that's our squad. That's our squad. And they have a really integral part in the formation of the mixtape in many ways. I'll tell you about it. But basically what happens every year, and it's already happened, I think, this year at least once, but every year around this time, spring training, opening day looming, you read an article, and the article says the percentage of Black American players has dipped to like an all-time low. It's like clockwork for the last 5 or 6 years.
I was like, let me dust this off. It's been off for a year.
And so I knew, in my mind, I'm kind of like, man, I know this is coming. And every year it just really kind of frustrates me because they write this article, but then no one ever does anything. And I always felt like media plays a part of in this. Now, again, not all media, but overall, I think media has allowed baseball to move into isolation, if you will, and just said, these are the baseball fans and this is it. And they don't cover baseball like they cover other sports. So I'm coming from this as a fan first, but as somebody that's at least familiar with media. And the kicker for me was, to answer your question, I knew these articles were coming out. This is about two years ago, so the start of two seasons ago. And I started looking for baseball content that I wanted to consume. And, you know, I'm in my 40s, and so not everything that the younger generation does appeals to me. But I see over time and House of Highlights and all of these things that come with basketball or football.
Yeah,
I'm a big boxing fan. I see amazing boxing highlights if you're into that. And I'm looking for baseball content, and I didn't find anything that spoke to me. And so I was like, all right, well, I have the ability and the talent. And I always said, post COVID, one thing that did change was the you know, we weren't going outside. So it wasn't like a community blog in Richmond who had anything to report. So two seasons ago, the first thing I did that kind of really sparked this was in my, I had two guests on that really changed the trajectory of what the mixtape would be. The first one is Xavier Shrugs, who is a media personality now, MLB Network commentator. He's great. He wasn't even on MLB Network at the time I had him on the podcast, on my old podcast. But just talking to him and hearing his passion about baseball and talking about Black baseball was just really eye-opening. It gave me some hope that I was like, dude, there's people out here like me. And then I met a wonderful woman by the name of Lonnie Murray. Lonnie Murray is the I think she's the first, absolute first baseball agent that was certified by the MLBPA. So she's like living history. And she's an active agent as we speak to this day. She has clients.
Oh, wow.
And so talking to Xavier, talking to Lonnie, and just hearing their passion about the game and understanding that there are people out there like me that want more baseball in kind of in the media space. So those two really gave me the battery in my back that said, not only is this awesome, but there are people that would be interested in this. Then you asked about the Richmond Flying Squirrels. Around this time, you know, they canceled the 2020 minor league baseball season. So we're coming back into 2021. And again, community is really important to me. One of the elements in Richmond, obviously is known for its history, a lot of Civil War history, some of it not so great.
Yeah.
We had a ton of Confederate statues that were removed during 2020. But one of the things that we were talking about, the healing process, and the Richmond Squirrels is one of the only entities that I could identify where race, region didn't really matter. Like, there's still some socioeconomical factors if you can afford to go to a game, depending on how large your family is. But it was one place where you could go from a population that's in the city, which is a larger African-American popularity, to all the population, to all the regions where suburbs, you know, different families, not so diverse in some ways, diverse in some, but they all came to the ballpark, right? They all came and loved the Flying Squirrels. So I wrote a very cold, unsolicited letter to the CEO of the Richmond Flying Squirrels and said, hey, you guys have an opportunity to really heal our community in many ways by offering baseball, but also acknowledging kind of what's happened for the last year, which the stadium is literally less than like 3 miles away from kind of the epicenter of our civil rights movement in 2020. So it was very close. Everything was very close to home. And to their credit, the Richmond Squirrels, Todd Parney is who everybody calls him, Parney, and Oppo and their entire team was like, yes, we need partners in this. And we've worked together ever since that time to really work on kind of healing our community. And so a combination of having those podcasts, working with the Flying Squirrels, because if any of these things had gone poorly, Ed, it probably wouldn't be a Black baseball mixtape. But all of these things kind of lined up in a way in which we could say, okay, what's next? How can we really put my media knowledge and podcasting knowledge and all of that to start building a platform that could highlight Black baseball in the country? So, and then the Black baseball mixtape was born.
Dude, that's amazing. That's awesome. Like, I mean, I love hearing things like that, right? Like, I mean, this year has been a year for me to just really be like, you know, what else is out there, right? Like, I mean, let's just explore that, right? Because it's that, like you said, though, right? I think to baseball's detriment as well, they have been their own worst enemy in with like, oh, you know, baseball is a regional sport. It's not. It's a national pastime. It's cross country, right? So, And I think that, you know, finally them, you know, baseball acknowledging that, you know, the Negro Leagues was actually a major league really did help into showcasing a lot of the history. Right. But what you're doing is you're like, yeah, history is great and it's awesome and we need to really embrace that. But let's also embrace what's going on right now. you know, the players that are coming up. Let's highlight that. Let's highlight those communities that are hungry for baseball, not just football and basketball, right? Because those are the ones that you see on ESPN and Fox Sports. Let's highlight baseball as well.
Yeah, I strongly believe you got to give somebody, you got to give an audience somebody to root for. And one of the hardest things about baseball is a lot of our community, when I say our community, I mean a lot of Black American communities, don't even know who's on their team. And unfortunately, sometimes they don't even have Black American players on their team or those types of things. One of the first things that I did when we were really making a go at this at the start of last season was we did a series of shorts on Instagram that basically said one player, one Black American player to watch or root for on every team that had a Black American player. So going into the season, you like the Atlanta Braves. Let me tell you about Michael Harris. You like the Milwaukee Brewers. Let me tell you about Devin Williams. If you like the Chicago Cubs at the time, now the New York Yankees, let me tell you about Marcus Stroman or Hunter Green or just people to root for. And just having somebody to see and follow, then you're even more invested. You start to buy in. And because I live in Richmond, we live in a double A town, I'm able to catch players on the way up, especially at the stadium at a double A Eastern League game. Yep. And they're very accessible when it comes to that level of baseball.
So 100%.
You're interviewing players and you're introducing the game to fans. And I say that is, if I had a nickel, not even a nickel, I mean, if I had a quarter for every person that I ask about baseball, especially Black people ask about baseball, the response is, oh man, I used to follow Ken Griffey Jr., Barry Bonds, Frank Thomas. Derek Jeter's kind of the last of the Mohicans in Black baseball fandom.
Interesting.
And then there's like a lull, and now you're starting to see people start to root for players again. Now you're starting to see, especially going into this year, people know who Mookie Betts is, right? People know who some of the players are, but it's still, we still got a ways to go to get people excited.
You know, I love that you did that. That shorts.
Yep.
I'm sorry, like, all right, here's it. Okay, Cleveland Guardians. Boom, 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 boom. Here's some of these players. Yep. You know, highlight those. Are you bringing that back? Because I watch every single episode.
We got different things we're doing this season. But it does take a lot of research. Not to say that's not why I would do it. This season. But no, one of the things that I've been able to do, I make a lot of spreadsheets, and I tell you, I'm looking at 40-man rosters. I'm looking at minor leagues. I'm looking at coaches. One of the things that was completely mind blowing to me when I started looking into this, was that there are 300. Division I college baseball programs. When I started the mixtape, so of the 300, 17 of them are HBCUs, which are historically Black colleges and universities. Yeah. So you take those away. So 283 PWI, predominantly white, Division I college baseball programs. When I started the mixtape just two and a half years ago, there were only two Black head coaches of those 280. True story.
Are you
that? So at the beginning of last season's Division I college baseball offseason, they hired three Black coaches. So they went from two to five. And one of the first things we did was we interviewed all five of those coaches. I got them on the podcast in a span of 2 weeks because it was easy to get. They weren't hard. They weren't inaccessible.
They're right there.
And so talking to those guys and learning, like, why is it this way? Why are there so many challenges to get our kids to play college baseball? Because the way the world works now, there's an amateur draft. There's the draft out right out of high school. But a lot of the draft, American draftees, are getting drafted out of college. College is actually very important to start your trajectory to play in Major League Baseball, play in the pros.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole different system we can talk about, the international draft system, which is a lot more like, if you really think about this, it's a lot more like the Negro Leagues used to be, because you could sign kids just about at any age from these baseball academies in Dominican and all kinds of places and move them right into your program. That's kind of how the Negro Leagues used to be. But now our Black American players are put into the American system, which requires a lot of things to go well before you can really get to where you need to be. So there's a lot of it, but
yeah,
there we are.
Yes. It makes me so angry too, because, you know, just to think about it, you know,
yeah.
Because, you know, the opportunities for, and like you said, it's like, you know, for the opportunities for them is they also want to see a person coming from where they are at.
Sure.
You know, they want to see that example.
Sure.
It's just, you know, that's why you see why football and basketball is so popular, because they can relate to what they see, you know. And with baseball, you know, it's become such a hard sport to get into because of travel baseball, and you got all these sport, separate sections that you have, and it's become so expensive that it's become so inaccessible to a lot of people of, you know, people of color.
Absolutely. I realize that now, as we kind of look at this in the time period that we are, that yes, they have priced a lot of kids, not just Black kids, but a lot of kids out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started this project, I was a little bit less on the cost, but I should have been more focused on it, because the system in place is difficult for a lot of Black kids. The price of all of the travel and so forth is very difficult on a lot of Black kids. The other thing that's actually really difficult that people probably wouldn't notice if you weren't really in the system looking at who's being identified and ranked, is that in baseball, there is almost zero reward in 2024 for potential. What I mean by that is, if you are a raw athlete that says, hey, I want to play baseball, in years past, this was in the 70s, 60s, 70s, or 80s, they would look at an athlete, a scout would look at an athlete and say, we can do something with that kid. In 2024, there is no room for potential. So you could look at unless you are just an absolute kind of physical specimen that shows potential. But the average kid that just has potential, where I think in those years of yesteryear, would have been like, hey, let's see what this kid has. And that kid could actually turn out to be Ricky Henderson. Today, in today's kind of system, there's no room for just the raw athlete. And it hurts us. It hurts our community, because there no Division I coach at a major program has roster room for potential.
No.
Their competition and kids, whether they're actually their upside is lower, but some of these kids have been taking travel ball reps since they were 7 years old. So you get a 16, 17, 18 year old that has raw potential versus this kind of polished kid. Again, upside may be different, but it really affects our community. The other thing that really affects our community is that scouts don't go to a lot of places, especially in the Northeast, Midwest, cold weather.
Yep.
They really write a lot of the regions off, and they look, you know, Texas, Louisiana, Florida, Georgia. And if you're not down there showing out, or you're not on a travel team that goes down there showing out, a lot of our talented kids just never get recruited.
Yeah, you got those ING academies and things like that. Yeah. I was like, why am I going to go all over the place where I can just go down here to ING Academy and see, you know, the best of the best?
Yeah, and it's tough too, because again, there are kids that may wanted to choose baseball, but they're getting looks in football and basketball because they recruit football and basketball in the Northeast or the Midwest. Yeah. If you're a good player from Michigan, it's still really hard. If you like, I just interviewed Warner Blakely on our podcast, and Warner's he's a young guy. He was the first ever Under Armour All-American from Detroit.
God.
He was drafted in, I think, 2020. So think about that. Like, I mean, it's just difficult.
That's, oh, it just makes me angry.
But I will say this. It's not a gloom and doom situation. There's there's a lot of things moving in the right direction, and I think
100%
deserve a lot of credit for that, including MLB.
So let me ask you this then, because I also want to, you know, and let's talk about a little bit about college, right? Because you got Division One, Division Two.
Yeah.
What is the because of the, you were talking, right? You know, recruiting, it's a little difficult with those higher division schools.
Yeah.
What is the role of JUCO schools? What is that role that they play into this? Like, are they also in that same situation in which they're looking for those students that are like, you know, they have not played really well or grades have affected in Division One, and those get recruited more than the other players?
It's interesting. It depends. JUCO is such a weird phenomenon. And I say that because if you take the top 20 JUCO teams, maybe even the top 25, they've got better players and better arms than some of the Division One guys.
I 100% agree.
Yeah, you just have to understand the system. There's a lot of things where if you go to a Division One Power Five, again, you're not eligible for the draft for 3 years, basically. Mm-hmm. If you take this JUCO route, you might be able to get drafted every year. Some of the rules might have changed, but a lot of major league players came out of JUCO simply because of the way that the system, and there's still some very, very elite JUCO programs. One of the things that really matters when you talk about college and recruiting is that, unlike football and basketball, you don't get full scholarships in baseball.
No,
they only got 11 per team, and they divvy them all up no matter how good you are.
Yeah.
So think about that. Now there's other assistants, and now in today's age, 2024, you've got NIL, which is, you know, they're still working their way through it, but it's already changing the number of players that are staying in school, that are enjoying college more. They're able to make some money. It's a whole different operation than it was even 2 or 3 years ago because of what's the changing landscape. And you're starting to see this year, University of Texas has 9 black players, black American players on their team. I think Florida, University of Missouri in the SEC has 8. Florida State, I think, has 6 or 7. LSU has a lot. So you're starting to see with some of these changes, a lot of our kids are choosing baseball. And they're going to make a run at it.
I love that. And you're right. How much has the landscape changed in the last...
A whole different world than 2 years ago. It's a whole different world.
But, like, it's insanity. It was like, oh, wait. You want me to go into the draft, make less money, go play single A where I can stay in college, enjoy college life, and make however much money, more money than I would if I was playing, you know, in minor league baseball? No, I'm staying in college.
We forget how young some of these kids are. We really do. And yeah, especially the ones that come out of high school and go right into that pro system. And we talk about them all spring training. We're talking about James Wood and Elijah Green and all of these players like they're kind of adults. And they're not. Like I interviewed James Wood last year, and I just remember talking to him, and he's a massive, you know, he's a massive human being, and he's an amazing baseball player. And it just struck me when I was talking to him, I'd asked him something, and he made it very clear that he's like, bro, I'm 20 years old. Like, I can't even go to a bar. And he's got, all of this signing bonus and these things. And so we forget how young these kids are. We forget how some of these high A, especially in double A towns, if you went to Clemson, Florida State, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, you're playing in front of thousands and thousands of fans that are diehard, doing all kinds of great things in college baseball. If you're playing in high A in Lynchburg, you'll be lucky if you get a couple hundred fans.
Bro, so, that is the exact same team I was just thinking about. I was like, imagine going from Clemson to playing in Lynchburg less than 100 people sometimes at a game.
And so I don't get to consult about this a lot, but I tell folks, man, if you have an opportunity to play at Alabama or Auburn or somewhere in the ACC like Wake Forest or UVA, bro, just think about it real hard. That signing bonus has got to be real good because now you're able to make money and you get to play in these environments for a couple years and probably be a better pro. So it's awesome.
And let's not even talk about the facilities that are available at their disposal.
Yeah.
some compared to these, you know, these minor league teams like Lynchburg, for example.
Yeah, some of them are amazing. Some of them are absolutely amazing. So yeah.
And recruiting has gotten so crazy.
Yeah, that's the hard part with some of these transfer portals and things of that nature. This year, there's an interesting phenomenon, and it was all NIL based, but this year you saw like top players on really good teams transferring schools. Mm-hmm. And there's no, I don't think there's any justification for that outside of they're getting paid way more money. Mm-hmm. They have a better NIL program at school X versus school, you know, old school. So, I mean, it is what it is. More, I am a player empowerment person, but I do think they've got to figure out it's really difficult to not only have to recruit a new class every year, but to recruit your old class every year. And that's what's happening now.
I was just going to say, like, it is very hard, like you said, to recruit new incoming players.
Yep. And you got to recruit your own
players that you have.
And it's we were just in Houston last month for the kickoff of college baseball season. I was able to take those games in and talk to a lot of HBCU coaches, and I asked them about NIL and transfer portal, and I was expecting them. I actually didn't know what I expected the result to be, but the result was this: hey, it's really hard on us because say we have a kid that goes to a Grambling State or a Southern. And he really shows out, and he's a freshman. That guy's going Power 5 next year. He's not staying. Now, the other side of it is they've got Power 5, you know, Mississippi State right-handed pitcher that performs poorly. They're probably coming to an HBCU. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
it's a really hard.
Yeah, but they're not – they can't rest on just recruiting a new class every year. They've got to look at the portal very hard on both ends because, like I said, yeah.
Interesting. I've never really we talk about NIL and transfer portal, but we never really think about, like, you're recruiting your own class, your own players that you already recruited constantly every year.
And some of it doesn't matter. Like, what I mean by that is amazing player. This guy's going to be a top-round draft pick. He's an outfielder pitcher. He's at Texas A&M. His name's Braden Montgomery. Amazing, amazing player. I love everything about his game. He left Stanford last year to go to Texas A&M this year. Stanford played in the College World Series. He started. So it wasn't a situation where, you know, he's not at a great school, great program.
Stanford is a great school.
Yeah, it's a great baseball school. And, again, all the things we talk about, it's not a facilities-based thing. Apparently, the coach seems to be great. They played him. So him going, starting the season at Texas A&M, he's playing amazing at Texas A&M. But it's also a situation where it's like, all right, we got to look at, you know, things like this. And why would somebody end up at Alabama or Tennessee from another amazing program? And it's probably because of NIL.
NIL is really, you know, wrecking some.
You know, again, it's both sides.
No, and I'm all for it. Listen, listen, if you can get an opportunity to make money at college and playing a game, right? Because, you know, we talk about, like, you know, coaches, you know, like, they can just up and leave whenever they want.
Sure.
Right. And why can't the players do it? Like, you know, until you fix that system, you can't be, you know, talking back about the player system, because obviously the coaches are doing whenever they want.
And I do think the scholarship situations allows me to be more of an advocate for baseball. I think, you know, I'm of the age where I remember as a kid, I remember that Fab Five Michigan team. And, you hear the stories of, like, Chris Webber not even being able to afford pizza. And, like, they're selling number 4 Michigan jerseys. And, like,
he's not making a single cent.
Not
out of
a
that
single thing. Cent. And he would get penalized.
Yeah.
If he tried to make money off of it, like, he would get suspended. And, you know, they took away all the banners in Michigan for different things. So.
But they sure didn't, you know. Didn't say anything when they were there winning championships and games and all that.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I remember all of that.
Yeah, some of those.
I'm of that certain age when I remember all that.
Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's talk about your podcast, right? Because, and also, because you do something that I kind of get better at. It is, like, you do live Instagram all the time, you know, showcasing players and all that. Like, let's talk about it from the standpoint of like your content, like, cause you got to look at content creation. You got to look at putting it out there for the masses. Like, what's your process, you know, when you're starting to look at, you know, for your podcast and for the Instagram lives, like, how do you look at all of that?
I try to have fun with it. I try to provide content that I would want to consume.
Okay.
So it's evolved over time. At first, it was just, hey, if I can get a podcast, I'll release the podcast basically as soon as I get it. It had no rhyme or reason behind it. And when you start working with partners and sponsors and things of that nature, they tell you, one of the first things that they all tell you is you got to have a consistent schedule. We got to at least know consistently, say, once a week, whether it's twice a week, three times a week, the new episode is coming. So I really started to try to implement that where every Monday, if there's a new podcast that I have, it's coming. One of the things that I've done is, you know, baseball season's long. It's not, you don't always have a lot of new content. What I've done is I kind of, if I have a bunch of shorter interviews or things of that nature, I'll hold some of them, make them a little bit more evergreen. And I might post a podcast that's 10 minutes. It might be 12 minutes. Just this last week, we dropped an episode with LaTroy Hawkins. That was an hour. Couple other, you know, the longer form ones, maybe they usually don't go over an hour, but around an hour time. But if I don't have that, we'll cut something else and try to give the community something on Monday. Then that kind of, you pair that with all the other stuff that you want to do. Some of it may be podcast, some of it may not be, depending on kind of where the content fits. But I'm pretty consistent with trying to be active on Instagram with content creation and trying to highlight things that I would want to see. We're in the middle of a, it'll end this week, but we're in the middle of a movie, like the top baseball movies of all time.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
And that was completely out of happenstance. And what I mean by that was I had an old clip from one of the early podcasts with Xavier Shrugs, and we were talking about best baseball movies. I cut out that clip and posted it on Instagram, and then everybody started weighing in and voting and all that. So we took the 8 top movies from people's comments, and then we made like a little bit of a tournament. So that's the type of stuff that we want. It'll be this week. We're going to start dropping black baseball book content. Like, there's a bunch of books that people should be put up on. So we're going to drop that type of stuff along with, hey, look, we got to get ready for the season. Spring training's happening, free agency's happening. So I really try to take content creation from an educational standpoint and an entertaining standpoint. And if I do that enough, if I'm entertaining enough and educational enough, I feel like it'll start to develop into a level of expertise where people will kind of start to look at the site and look at the people on the site as almost your kind of resident black baseball experts.
I love that. That's amazing. Which, by the way, I am currently, when I go work out, I listen to books. And one book that I'm listening, I know I'm weird.
No, I like it. I listen to podcasts and books. And
so do I. Like, but, yeah. And one book that I'm listening to is on Satchel Paige.
Okay.
Which I believe has been, to me, in my opinion, like, has been one of the most eccentric, most interesting characters, right?
What book is it? Which one is it?
It's by Larry Tai.
Okay. Yeah. Satchel. Yeah. No, I'm familiar. Yeah.
Oh, such a great book so far, yeah. Right? Like, he's such a character.
Yeah.
And he purposely did that, you know? With his age, and no one knew what his age, he always giving you a different answer. So I'm like, here's a man that understood how to market himself in a time where there's no social media.
He did. And he was a legend. And the tragedy of Satchel Paige is really his time. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that, I mean, obviously everybody knows he pitched well into the later years of his life, but he always wanted to be a major leaguer. And he was. He was, I think, the third. He was third. It was Jackie, Larry Doby, and Satchel.
Which they play for my team, Cleveland Indians.
Yeah. but the idea that he could have, like, all of them could have played, quote unquote, could have played a lot earlier. It was very clear that, you know, if it had been 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and they had figured it out, Satchel would have been the man. Like, mm-hmm. It was very clear. I mean, every white player that played with him, everybody said Satchel Paige would have been the guy. And so, you know, I know based off of what we can read and some wonderful historians like Bob Kendrick, and he gets his stories from Buck O'Neill. We know that Satchel's not a guy that lived with a lot of regrets, but I do think if he had been in his prime and the world outside of black baseball could have seen him in his prime, I think that would have been special.
I find it very interesting that it could have been him, you know, that he would have been chosen to be the first player to, you know, break the color barrier. But because of his age, right? I mean, it's like because of his character.
It's definitely age. I do think there was some character stuff in there that would have scared a lot of white owners, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, more so his age, because white owners were extremely greedy at that time. Let not say that owners, all owners are
what?
Greedy now.
That's insane.
But they were extremely greedy to the point where, you know, I do think in many ways Branch Rickey's genius was, you know, Branch Rickey basically asked for forgiveness instead of permission. I think your team, 100%. You just mentioned, Bill Veeck actually wanted to do it several years earlier,
but he asked for permission.
He didn't ask for forgiveness. And he got screwed over in many ways. As soon as Branch Rickey figured it out, you know, Bill Veeck was the guy that was like months later. It was not, people don't realize how close Larry Doby and Jackie Robinson were, but they were close.
Very.
And Veeck was like, we're gonna go do this thing because I've always wanted to do it.
Bill Veeck wanted to do it way before Rickey. And that's the one thing that I like you said, I wish he would have asked for forgiveness and not permission.
He's also different. Again, the thing about all of this stuff, and I love talking about it, but it's also like clicks matter. And we're talking about content creation.
Yeah.
As content creators, it matters so much today in this world that we live in social media. Two people can probably do damn near the exact same thing, and one of them is going to get penalized in, you know, whatever you call it, you know, get the skewer of American public on that person for doing the same thing that this guy did over here. Yet you never hear about this person. And it's really because who do you like, right? Who are you connected to?
Who's more likable? Yeah.
Who's more likable? And I'll tell you this. I wouldn't say Branch Rickey was overly likable, but Bill Veeck was definitely disliked.
Oh, like he was not the guy.
Yeah. He was not the guy that was going to break the color barrier. They would,
because he was someone who pushed the envelope all the time.
Yeah. And all the owners are pissed at him. And yeah, no, absolutely. He couldn't do it.
Yeah. At the end of the day, I'm glad that it happened. I'm glad that, you know, but it's like, you know, we all have that conversation, right? Or what could have been.
Sure.
You know, if Bill Veeck would have been the one, and or, you know, or Satchel would have been the one he was chosen. That's neither here or there anymore. Like, history is already history. It's, you know, can't be, you know, you can't change history. But man, Satchel would have been, interesting to see, you know, just mowing down, you know, player after player after player.
And it's fun to talk to pro players today. I ask every person I interview if they could face any pitcher living or dead. Any hitter I ask, if you could face any pitcher living or dead, who would you want to face? Satchel Paige gets a ton of votes. Bob Gibson probably gets the most. But Satchel Paige gets a ton of votes. Derek Jeter selected Satchel Paige. So.
Yeah, I remember that interview.
Yeah.
And that was a good interview, because I was like, oh man, Satchel. You know, you're talking about a, you know, Hall of Fame shortstop right there. It's like, oh yeah, would have been Satchel all day long.
Yeah, he didn't hesitate at all.
It was zero hesitation on that. Yep. Oh, and you're right. It's all about, like, you know, talking about content, right? It's all about the clicks. It's all about, you know, who pushes it in which matter. Which you push that information that could, you know, get you thousands of clicks versus a couple hundred.
Yeah, I haven't figured that out yet either. So
I'm with you, bro. I'm still trying to figure this out.
I haven't figured that out either.
Hope you guys enjoy that episode with Mark Cheatham. Now, make sure you guys are following him on Instagram, Twitter, everywhere. Also, make sure you guys are following and subscribing to his podcast, okay? Great content. Now, before I give you guys the dad joke of the episode, I'm going to let you guys know that the Kirkbrain Media Meetup is still happening, guys, okay? If you guys have not signed up for it, if you guys have not gotten your plane tickets, your hotel, your tickets for the games, make sure you guys get going on that, okay? May 24th, 25th, and 26th, we will be here. We're gonna watch some games, drink some beers, eat some hot dogs, the usual stuff. You know what? We'll also play catch. How's that? I don't care where we play catch, in the parking lot if we have to, but we will be playing catch, okay? So make sure you guys are getting ready for that. It's going to be awesome. Most of the corporate media people will be here as well. All right. Make sure you guys are following me on all of the socials. Follow the podcast. If you guys, you know, give it 5 stars. That way I go more up on the ranking. All right. I'll give you guys the dad joke now. Okay. Are you guys ready? All right. Here it is. Where do hamsters come from? Hamsterdam. All right. I'll see myself out, guys. And until then, keep grinding and always support the minor leagues. See ya.
This podcast is part of the Curved Brim Media Network. Here are some of the other members of Curved Brim Media.
Hi, this is Kelly Robinson, the minor league nerd. My YouTube channel explores the history of minor league baseball teams. More than just stats, we delve into team lineage, sharing stories from current franchises to obscure one-year wonders.
I'm Paul Caputo, and on the Baseball by Design podcast, I talk to minor league baseball teams, designers, and other super interesting people about what these minor league baseball logos mean, and I talk a little bit about ice cream helmets.
What's up, Bucketheads? I'm Anna DiTomaso, and each week on the Baseball Bucket List podcast, I speak with a different fan about their favorite baseball memories, what the game means to them, and what's left to check off on their baseball bucket list.
Hey, everyone. It's Eric from the great state of Kansas.
This is Johnny from the New Orleans Baby Cakes Memorial Museum.
And we are the Earn Fun Average podcast,
where we talk to a variety of guests about their love of baseball and have fun doing it.
America, lower your standards.
Average is what we do best.
This is Patrick.
And Corey.
Of BaseballMapper.com. And we have made an interactive map to help highlight all baseball teams from the majors down to collegiate summer leagues.
We want to bring you closer to baseball. So get on the site and find a team near you today.
Hey guys, this is Patrick Larson from the Minor League Baseball Hat History Series. And in every episode, I go through the history of minor league teams through my personal collection of hats. You can find me on Twitter at PatLarson1. I hope you guys enjoy.
Learn more about Curved Brim Media at curvedbrimmedia.com.